Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today my guest is Jack Gilbert, and we are going to be talking about two of his publications. One is a book about children's fables called Gilbert's Fables, and then we're going to be talking about The Heart of Leadership. Now, it seems like they are at opposite ends of the spectrum, and in a way, they are. But each of his publications have powerful messages in them, and I want to welcome Jack Gilbert to the show.
Thank you.
Now, I should call you Dr. Jack Gilbert, perhaps. Would you mind if I just called you Jack?
I would prefer it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Now, I want my audience to know that you're the Master of Healthcare Innovation Program, and you're a clinical associate professor in the College of Nursing and Health Innovation at Arizona State University. You are also the president of New Page Consulting, and you have become very much respected and acknowledged as being an expert in organizational and personal integrity leadership and large-scale change. We're going to be talking about some of that after we discuss Gilbert's Fables. Now, I want my audience to know that I had been told about your book. This was last year, and your schedule was so busy, I wasn't able to get you on the show at the time. But Gilbert's Fables, I was so impressed with this book because the art in it is just exquisite. But your stories are just marvelous, and an adult would enjoy them as much as a youngster. Now, how long did it take for you to accumulate these little stories and put this absolutely charming book together?
Well, really, it was in a burst, probably around 1 to 2 months. And then they lay just fallow for a long time until I decided either I was going to publish them or make 3 copies for my kids. One of the two, but I was going to complete them in some way.
Now, Molly Idle is the artist that did your illustrations, and she's exquisite. She is
wonderful, a wonderful illustrator. She lives here in Phoenix, the Phoenix area.
Now, one of the purposes of your book, the stories that you have compiled here, is that you are interested in character education for children. Why is that so important to you?
I think I'm just interested in values and how values are lived. I think when you look at the heart of leadership, it's about values. I wrote a book on ethical wisdom, which was the subject of my dissertation, The Role of Ethics in Decision-Making, about values. And these fables, I didn't actually realize as I was writing them, but they're really about values.
Very much so. And I just really enjoyed the artistry that Molly put together, because it, just for children, they will absolutely love this. They can totally relate to the illustrations. They're just beautifully portrayed. And what's nice is that the book is a book you could carry around with you. If you're traveling with your kids, you can take it easily. If you're a teacher, you wanted to share the stories, fits into a briefcase very nicely. And you have 7 stories in here. And
yes.
Omster is the first one that you started out with. And it's so appropriate for today's world, because we really are concerned more and more about bullying. Now, that's nothing new. That's happened every generation that's ever been on this planet. But we have a whole new level of it now called cyberbullying. And this story, Omster, was it based on something you experienced in life when you were younger?
I think so. I mean, I didn't get bullied at school, but my brother sure knocked me around. It was just the story sort of came out. I used fanciful names because they freed up my imagination, and so the story just came out, and it was about a young boy who gets made fun of and is really humiliated by it, and this serene, strange creature that seems immune to that kind of teasing.
Mm-hmm.
And what he teaches the young boy about really self-acceptance and dealing with bullying.
And it's absolutely wonderfully done. And the interaction, like Umster saying, you have a wonderful, still place of calm and true happiness. It's the feeling of white bread, butter, and jam, made and eaten exactly as you like it in a quiet place. Close your eyes and feel again the experience of being in that place. Your words and your description, a youngster can just see the pictures that you are conveying in their mind, and knowing how to distance themselves from this bullying environment so they take charge of who they are, and making it okay that sometimes things can be difficult. And that's what I really liked about your stories. It's letting a child know life is not going to be absolutely safe and secure. There's no way you can guarantee that. And sometimes life gets tough. In our world today, don't you feel lots of times parents are just so concerned about safety for their children that they shelter them too much?
I think we're always a contradiction, aren't we? We know that we grow through challenge, and at the same time, we want to protect our children from any adversity. And it's a contradiction we sort of live every day, I think. But
now,
in our hearts, we know that we grow through challenge, and they shall too.
Yes, they will. And if they don't do it when they're younger, they're going to be forced to do it when they're adults. And in my personal biased opinion, it's better if you go through it when you're younger. You don't want to be doing it when you're 60 to 80 or 90 years of age. At least I don't think so. One of the points in your book that I think is well done is you have pages at the end of each of the 7 stories, conversation starters. And this is a wonderful tool for a teacher to use or for a parent to use to create an interaction with the youngsters that you've shared the story with. And I think it really allows for a communication that, sadly, we don't always have in today's world. People are so engrossed with their technology, they don't want to sit down and ask questions like this. And kids are wonderfully open. They'll be honest about what they say. We might not always like what we hear, but it's really something. Now, I especially liked your story on Marvelon and the Vigna. I really like that. That's about the dragon.
Yeah.
I loved that story, and I thought, boy, I think more adults need to read this story than the kids, but it would help on both levels. But Marvelon is just a fabulous, fabulous character. What was the inspiration for him?
Just the idea of, well, the inspiration for most of the fables was some drawings that a colleague had done, and I was actually visiting her to review a business project that we were doing together for a client. And she said, look, she was shy about it, but she said, here are some kind of doodles or fanciful drawings I did when I was in high school, and I'm just revisiting them. And I looked at them, and they were very strange kind of creatures, and sometimes they looked like one looked like a dragon, and I just said, you should write stories about these, and she had no interest in that, but she made me copies, and those doodles and drawings became the inspiration for most of the stories. And so there was one of what looked like a young, enthusiastic dragon.
Mm-hmm. And the young dragon is just adorable. I fell in love with him immediately. And the children that Marvelon gets to meet. And in this wonderful story, it's about differences. And the parents of the children were saying, oh, don't go over to the dragons, they're terrible, blah, 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 blah. And then the parents of Marvelon, the dragon, saying, oh, you don't know about humans, they're going to kill you, this is what they're going to do. And I'm like, holy Moses, how much of this goes on in everyday life? I mean, it's just, it's amazing. So your story is so compelling because the reality is once they understand about their differences and they get past their fears and their ignorance, they're able to live in harmony.
Yes. It's, you know, at one level it's like an idealistic, but I don't think there's anything idealistic about hope. And also, I just want to mention about the conversation starters that you mentioned. It really became clear early on that it would be great if this was a vehicle for communication between adults and children that they care for, whether they were parents, grandparents, teachers, friends. It didn't really matter. And I know that you talked about, you know, connection to one's own life. It was very difficult for my parents and I to talk about those kind of things, not because they were busy, because they were tired, because it just wasn't part of the fabric of our lives. And so I hope that people who read these stories will see it as an opportunity for communication and exploration together.
Oh, yes, I think. And the story that you've got called The Young Warrior, to me, and again, the illustrations are just awesome, the story about a boy being mentored was so profound because he goes through a tremendous learning experience with this warrior, and it is very heartwarming because, again, he's encouraging him to grow up. He's encouraging him to think. He's encouraging him to do. He's encouraging him to be accountable, to be responsible. And eventually, the warrior is killed in a battle. The great mentor for this young boy is gone, but there's a very special ending to the story that I don't want to reveal, where he is acknowledged by others how much he had been of value and treasured by his mentor. And I just think that is just so heartwarming. It's absolutely wonderful. So that's the one book, Gilbert Fables. And for those of you, I just recommend it highly. The book is just extremely well done, and I know that you'll enjoy the stories as much as your children will. Now, let's shift into another modality, Jack. We're going to be splitting and going to another spectrum. We're talking about reality today. We're going to be talking about your book, The Heart of Leadership. And when I read the subtitle, I thought, oh, okay. It's inspiration and practical guidance for transforming your healthcare organization. I thought, oh, wow, this is interesting. This is one of the hottest topics in media today, and we have all kinds of clashes, and we probably could talk for hours about what's not right. However, this was far more than that. This is a book that really could be handed to almost anyone saying, read it, and let's talk about leadership. And even though the focus was the health industry, of which you are a very significant part, and you're deeply involved of it, and Dr. Barbara Balick also helped, you know, you two were a team in
doing this. Yes, we co-authored the book.
Mm-hmm. And I think that as a team, you accomplished something absolutely phenomenal. Now, in your preface of the book, and I'm going to quote from it exactly. There was, more than 10 years ago, a medical report to Err as Human. And the questions in the very first paragraph were so powerful, and I just want to share them with my audience. The question is asked, what has happened since the landmark Institute of Medicine report? Nationally, the number of people who die annually from medical error is estimated to be as high as or higher than previously thought. Furthermore, the gap between identifying a life-saving, evidence-based practice and its full implementation is a staggering 17 years. How can so little have changed when the tools, processes, and knowledge to improve safety and quality of care are far more widely known than a decade ago? And why do some organizations stand out positively in safety, quality, performance, engagement, and financial health? Wow. I looked at those questions and I went, okay, this is going to be quite a book. And you found individuals all over the country, all over the country, who are involved in healthcare. And you said you did your interviews based by certain headings. Growing up influences people in situations, pathway to healthcare, pathway to leadership, what's important to me as a leader, a good day, a bad day. And these people sent this information to you.
Actually, we spoke to them.
Okay.
We had one conversation with them. Always one of us was there in person, the other on the phone for up to 2 hours, and then we had a follow-up conversation with them about 3 or 4 weeks later. So we really were able to hear them talk at length, which was just wonderful.
Now, how many people did you interview before you decided on those that are in the book?
We actually set out to do 10. We thought that was the number that would work, and we had a very, very short order, about 16 to 17 names, and we really tried to get a really good mix, not only of environments that these people led, but four of them had a nursing background, three of them had a physician background, three of them had an administrative background, five were women, five were men. Mm-hmm. They were just a very balanced group in many ways, and yet they shared the same basic values in a remarkable way.
Yes, in fact, their characteristics that you found, four of them were very distinct. Their words and their actions matched. They were authentic. They demonstrated humility. Their passion for patient care is a personal value. They're intelligent, love to learn, they're reflective. They genuinely care about and trust others. Wow. That is really something. And you said the most important part about this is that these people that are participants in your book, it's not what they do. They're not in just a role model positioning. It's really who they are as people. And
yes, we really were interested in what made them tick, not so much the techniques they used, but what made these people tick. And we were fortunate to be able to explore that with all of them.
Now, one of them, and we're not going to be able to get to all of the people that you've mentioned, but I wanted to mention Donna Sullenberger. She's the Executive Vice President and Chief Executive Officer of the University of Texas Medical Branch Health System in Galveston, Texas. She grew up in the Midwest, and she credits her work ethic with the attitudes of the environment she grew up in the Midwest, because she said everybody thought it was normal to work 7 days a week. They weren't citified people. They were
They didn't farm, but they were surrounded by farmers, and it really gave her an attitude of you do what it takes to get the job done. And more than that, her parents were just always thought that there was a solution to a problem. And mm-hmm. as a leader, she comes from that point of view, like there's something to solve here. We may not have found it yet, but it's a very, and all of them shared this sense of possibility and are really looking towards the future and a big ambition for the future for their organizations and for their patients and communities.
I liked what she said about leaders. She said many times they get involved with problem du jour, and that's the first time I'd ever heard that one, and I thought, hey, that's something that's a real good phrase to adopt, the problem du jour. And she really likes to push conventional thinking. I know that it's something, stepping outside the box is the way I would phrase it, but she's quite a gal.
Yes, she is, and if you spent any time talking to her, you'd feel just this. Well, I know I was on there in person. I was so pumped up at the end of the conversation. Frankly, I was pumped up at the end of a lot of the conversations we had, but she is just, someone said about her who'd worked for her, there are people you walk through a brick wall for, and she's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so she elicits within her staff a real sense of belonging, a sense of contribution, and an infusion of the same kind of ambition mm-hmm. to really improve care.
Phil Newbold is the president and chief executive officer of Memorial Hospital and Health System in South Bend, Indiana. And he is another person that really is in favor of innovation in healthcare. And one of the things that was produced in his environment was the Memorial's tithing program. Tell us about that.
He was looking for the next step, and he had he's been there for about 22 or 23 years, and in that time he's had three major initiatives. The first one was quality, which took several years and continues. But the second one was around community, and he does what his system does, what few do, and that is they tithe. They give 10% of their operating margin, that is their profit or surplus, every year to the community. And they don't just give it to United Way or the Y to spend. They actually work with the community, and they do what are called deep dives, which is part of particular innovation approach. And, for example, they were looking at the drug problem within South Bend, and the mayor and Phil and others went on a tour to crack houses and really got to understand what the problem was firsthand. So not only do they give the money, they also give of themselves, and thus it becomes a healthcare system that's really committed to the health of the community in a very real way.
And I think they also are very supportive of education. He has a very strong attitude about being in the community, whether it's
yes.
through business organizations or through schools. Educating is extremely important. And he asked a question that I really liked under the innovation section, and it was, why don't hospitals have innovation and research and development policies like every other business in America and set aside some dollars to invent its future? And then they were instrumental in getting the MedPoint Express Care Center started. Tell us about those.
Well, it just points to their imagination. There had been you can sometimes go into these walk-in clinics
mm-hmm.
that have cropped up, and they had gone to Minneapolis to see one, some of the people from his healthcare system, and they come back and they said, it's a great idea, but we don't think the execution was very good. And so once again, they adopted a particular approach to innovation through prototyping, and people came through and they critiqued it, and they finally got something they thought was really good, and he quite simply picked up the phone and called Bentonville and Walmart and said, we've got something here, we'd like to pitch it to you. Very few hospital systems would have thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he pitched it to Walmart, and it became MedPoint.
Boy, things like that are needed so very, very much. It really, it's just so significant. And then I wanted to chat for a minute about Tim Porter O'Grady.
Yes.
I was sort of chuckling when I was reading through his story, because he decided, and he is the senior partner at Tim Porter O'Grady Associates, and he's out of Atlanta, and he went into nursing, and he was discriminated against because he was male. And I got such a kick out of that. I said, oh, yes, I've talked to some male nurses. And you hear so much about women being discriminated against, but when men cross over, let's say, into housekeeping or to nursing or something like this, the discrimination against them is just unbelievable. And it's done by the women against the men. And I just had to laugh.
He thought he was both discriminated for and, you know, against. But he has been very influential in nursing over the past 25 years. Anyone in nursing who knows something called shared governance or in healthcare. He was a driver for that. He said something very important, I think, about, because he consults a lot to healthcare leaders, and he said some healthcare leaders have forgotten the business of the business. And what he means by that is they've forgotten that the business is about care, and it's very mm-hmm. easy to slip into thinking the business is about the bottom line.
Oh, that's so true.
And all of these leaders, they attend to the bottom line. They're very rigorous. As Donna said, the budget is not a suggestion. It's real.
Mm-hmm.
But their primary focus is on care and the patient and the community. And as one of them said, Sister Mary Jean Ryan, we were asking her about the issues around money. She said, I have challenges like everybody else, but if it's not for the patient, what's the point?
Yes,
so you get a sense of where these people come from.
Absolutely. And Sister Mary Jean Ryan, boy, is she a pistol. She doesn't take nonsense from anyone. Whoa. I mean, I was going through her story and I went, mm-hmm. She came into the profession. She was a nun. And she saw botched surgeries and asked someone, does anyone going to speak up against this surgeon that's not doing their job right? And they said, oh, no, nobody. Well, she said, I would. She has so much pluck. It's just wonderful.
And I think personal courage is something that you see in these people. They have very strong egos, but they're not egotistical. And so they have a strong ego, but it allows them to say, well, I'm part of the team. I'm not the boss of everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's a very different approach because then it begins to include everybody. And you mentioned they care and trust about others. They include others in decision-making and thinking about what the future is. They engage people in a very authentic way.
You have also in this book, Guidance for Growing Leaders, you also have a chapter on guidance for boards. Oh, my goodness. How many times have businesses been destroyed because board members were chosen because they had money or something like this? Give us a tip on choosing board members.
Well, if you look at what often happens, they recruit, say, for a new chief executive officer, and a recruiter brings candidates to them. But if they don't know what their own values are, if they don't know what matters to them as a board and what matters to the organization, they have no basis on which to assess whether the values of a candidate fit with them. So that's one tip, that a board needs to know its own values and the values of the organization to see what the fit is with an outside candidate or even an inside candidate. And the other thing is to ask questions that go beyond the facade. We all want to look good in interviews, but we created a series of questions that we felt began to dig underneath just someone looking good and talking about all the good things they had done.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very true. And I think that when one is being interviewed, it is important that you look at it as it's because it's a very significant grouping of people that can have an impact on literally tens of thousands of individuals over a period of time.
Yes, and it's a very hard job because board members often come from outside of healthcare. It's a mm-hmm. complex environment. And the best CEOs are ones that educate their own board, include their own board in decision-making, and don't sort of keep them in the dark or tell them exactly what they should do. But it's a challenge for board members to even educate themselves about healthcare because of its complexity.
Oh, that is the truth. Well, Jack, this has been wonderful. For those of you listening, it's Dr. Jack Gilbert who has been with me. Two books that he's put out, again, at often perceived opposite ends of spectrums, Stories for Children, Gilbert's Fables, and The Heart of Leadership. Now, this is about a healthcare organizational format, but I'll tell you what, it is a leadership book. I think anyone could pick up this book and be inspired by what is in it. Good business sense, integrity, personal accountability, people that have a passion for what they do. It applies to any industry across the board. Jack, what's your website that people can go to find out more about your materials?
Well, it's gilbertsfables.com. The other website, you could go to Amazon, to order the book, mm-hmm. For The Heart of Leadership, or healthforum.com or .org. I'm actually not sure which. They're the American Hospital Association is the publisher of the book.
Okay.
And I apologize if it's expensive. We're trying to get the price reduced.
Well, it's really worth having. And again, anyone who is in business that might be listening to us today, this is something that I think is very, very eye-opening about the healthcare industry, but also about leadership itself. Again, it would apply to any industry as far as I'm concerned. Health Forum Online Store is where you can go to order the book, healthforumonlinestore.com, and that, again, is the heart of leadership. Jack, time has gone by like the wind. Thank you so very much for being with me today. I know your schedule is a busy one, and I appreciate your taking time to be with me.
Donna, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
You are more than welcome. Donna Sebo, don't forget, gilbertsfables.com for kids, and Heart of Leadership. Go to the website healthforumonlinestore.com. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome, welcome, and telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756 if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. By the way, I only have 5 tickets left for the Bonnie Lake, Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. Now, of course, this is in the Pacific Northwest, and so for those of you that are in this area, this is the first 3 weekends in August, and it's going to be at the Kelly Farm in Bonnie Lake. You can bring family and friends, and it is just an absolutely fabulous event. So if you'd like to get a free family pass for 2 adults and 2 children, I want you to give me a call at my office, 253-582-5604, or send me an email. Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Be sure to include your contact information. Have in the subject line, fair ticket, and then I'll be able to identify it. And by golly, it is just going to be a fabulous, fabulous event. It is the 4th largest event in the state of Washington. So it is absolutely incredibly terrific. I'm going to be there. I'll be in a booth, but I'll give you more information about that when we get to, actually, the month of August. That's not too far away, but do get in touch with me if you'd like that free ticket. Also, don't forget that in Washington, again, I've got 2 events that I'm going to be speaking and presenting in, and next Tuesday evening, July the 26th, I'm going to be appearing at the Progressive Spiritual Center at 6:30 in the evening. We're going to be talking about mental ecology. There's a small fee of $10. This is a class. I'm going to be doing demonstrations and sharing my knowledge and understanding with you about psychic development. I'll also have some books there, some CDs, and some handmade angels. Then, the following Saturday, on July 30th, I'm going to be at the Best Western Plus Rivers Edge And the Ascension Foundation is putting on an event that's in two portions on that Saturday. From 10 in the morning until 4:30 in the afternoon, there's going to be healers, there's going to be all kinds of people with crafts and services and this type of thing that you'll be able to come into. It's free to the public. I'll be there. I'll be doing many consultations for people that will be interested in them. Then at 4:30, we're closing everything down. We'll be opening up the hall again at 6 o'clock. I'm going to be one of the speakers, as well as Michael Shane, and there are going to be some other people there. But we're going to be actually talking about psychic development, what it is, and demonstrating it. So you're going to be seeing billet reading. You're going to be seeing demonstrations of the mind. You're going to be seeing apports, demonstrations there. There's just so much going on. So if you want more information, go to my website, look up my newsletter. You'll see the information about the location, et cetera, in the newsletter. You can also go to the AscensionFoundation.com website and or call them at 206-356-6356. So we're going to be taking care of that, and I'm looking forward to that. It's really going to be a fun event, so I hope you can come out. And there is a fee for the evening's engagement, and everything is up on the newsletter. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat, 888-815-9756. I came across a quote by George Matthew Adams that I'm going to share with you, but we do have a caller on the line. So let's take this caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Tisha from Tucson.
I'm sorry, dear, your voice was very faint. Where are you? Who are you again in Tucson?
Tisha.
Tisha. All right, Tisha, thanks for calling in. Welcome to the show. When I'm focusing on you, Tisha, I feel as if you are breaking through a glass ceiling, and maybe I better rephrase that. Instead of a glass ceiling, it's like a glass wall, and it's something that I think you had put around yourself mentally to be sure to be insulated from what you might perceive as a vulnerable situation. And you are realizing you're not vulnerable now. You don't need to have that kind of protection. So you are breaking it down. And I'm seeing you doing it with a thoroughness. It's as if you have a huge mallet in your hand and you're saying, that's it, I've had enough of it. I don't need to be concerned about having this glass wall self and some other things. And I agree with that. I think that's very important. So you have stepped up in your perception of who you are, what you do, and what you want to achieve and accomplish. And this has been a process for you, and I think you are to be patted on the back and congratulated because you're breaking through this, again, glass wall. Now, with this, it means that you're shifting into a different environment of interaction with people. That is going to help you career-wise. It also is going to enable you within personal relationships to feel more comfortable and more at ease. This is invaluable. You're going to see a progression with yourself and how you are able to be at ease in your own skin in whatever environment you might find yourself in, whether it's work, personal, it won't make any difference. So you've really made a significant breakthrough. You're working on it still, and it's like once you break down, or once you put a hole in the glass, that's wonderful, but now you've got to get rid of all the shards. So you're still going through a process of getting rid of every bit of this wall that you had had around yourself. And I just think it's terrific. I think it's great. You're making a breakthrough. Keep up the good work. Do you have a question for me?
Yes. I contacted Raquel, and she specializes in a particular field of expertise. And I wondered if you saw she and I working together.
Well, without knowing what the expertise is and what the objective is, I would say there has to be an open communication. Information has to be put on the table. No fantasy, no make-believe anything. You need to be able to really be up front. And I think that's part of what's going on with the breakthrough. I think that you are taking a positioning of openness and It has to be on both sides. When that is stated and when you are clear, you need to take time to be comfortable with each other, but to really know if this is someone that you want to have a working alliance with. And if this is someone that is going to be as dependable as you want them to be. Am I making sense to you?
Okay.
So don't be afraid to ask questions, and which I don't think you will be, but I think you need to formulate them in advance. What are the key points? What are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? You need to be honest about your strengths, your weaknesses, and she needs to be honest about hers. Because there's nobody that's perfect in everything. It just doesn't work that way.
Okay. So I emailed her a query on this.
Oh, forget the email. Get on the telephone and talk one-on-one. Emails don't give you anything. Now, is this person that lives in your community?
She asked that she be emailed, and I was just wondering if she saw the energy where she would respond.
No, hon, you're going about this the wrong way. You're hiding behind a facade. Pick up the telephone and talk to this person. Does she live in your community?
No, she does not.
Is she in another state?
Yes, she is.
All right. Then you've got to find out, number one, if this person has any credentials. Number two, you need to get some references. Number three, you need to realize that this may or may not be a positive thing if she's in another state. It may not work out that well. You really have to be on the phone. You have to talk to people. Email is so limiting. I really love email. I think it's great. But I will tell you, there is nothing to equal a one-on-one conversation. You've got to realize that this, if you're going to be making a business investment of time, effort, and energy with this person, you must really take that step.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. You have a wonderful day and success to you.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. If you want to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. George Matthew Adams made a comment. I honestly do not know the time when he made the comment, but I thought, wow, this is so appropriate for today's environment. This is what he said. There's a growing sentiment in America that regular savings should be ignored, that the government will take care of people and give them security when they get beyond a certain age or become old and unable to work. But it must be borne in mind that the people who earn and do save take care of the government. Were it not for the thrifty and the willing workers, the government would be in a bad way. That is the truth. Remember, governments don't do business. It's part of the problem. Personal bias here, but it's important to know what really makes a difference within a country. And when that is forgotten, when the average person is ignored and business is not encouraged, we're going to have a lot of challenges. There's no such thing as a free lunch. I learned that years ago. And when somebody says, oh, yes, there is, somewhere somebody is paying for it. And it's always a good thing to do to ask who is paying for it. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat, 888-815-9756. Okay, tomorrow we're going to be talking about rebounding. Yes. Have you ever had a situation where there's been a divorce and, gee whiz, you don't like to be alone, so you bring somebody into your life? It's called rebounding, but you can have the same effect when you lose a business, when you lose a loved one. There are so many different factors. Well, Teresa Musil is going to be on the air with me tomorrow, and we're going to be talking about that and then setting the captive free. Dr. Tsming Dun is going to be my guest on Friday. So we've got a great lineup of people, and we've got a dynamic lineup next week as well. And if you want to find out about the guests that are going to be on the air with me, All you have to do is check under show information, and there's a brief write-up on each of my guests as they come up. Again, if you want to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. Quickly, I want to remind you, if you want a ticket for the Renaissance Fair, get in touch with me. I've only got 5 left, and that's coming up really, really fast. We're taking a break. When we come back, I'm going to be sharing some information with you about sapphires. I am amazed at this stone and also at its many different factors of color. It's an amazing thing to learn. So we're going to be talking about that and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Hope you stay with me and join me. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-815-9756. Sapphires. Oh, they are absolutely spectacular. I had no idea, because I, like so many people, always thought sapphires were blue. Well, they are. But do you know they also come in violet, pink, white, green, black, yellow, orange? In fact, they come in all color shades. When I learned that a few years ago, I was really surprised. I happened to be in Nordstrom's, and they had this phenomenal display, which they do every once in a while. They'll feature certain gems. And I was just astonished at the color array that they had on display. Well, the only color that is not recognized in sapphire is red. And, of course, that is called a ruby. But the sapphire is and has been considered a sign of wealth and very, very much a representation of royalty. And there is this understanding about sapphires that kings and queens would be safe from harm or from envy. And it was purported to protect one from dishonesty, fraud, terror, poverty, stupidity, and ill temper. Do you know of anybody that needs that kind of help? Well, the star sapphire, that was an entirely different interpretation, because the star sapphire represents hope, faith, and destiny. And in German folklore, it was considered a stone of victory. They are just amazingly gorgeous. And there was a woman, and this goes back, I think about 10 years, and I was doing an appearance at a hotel, and she had the most magnificent stone I had ever seen, and a ring setting on her finger, and it was this magnificently brilliant orange stone that had been cut and faceted in the most wonderful way. And I looked at it, it was just absolutely spectacular, and I asked her what kind of a stone it was, because I'd never seen an orange, a golden orange stone like she had. Well, I found out what it was. It's a Padparasha sapphire, an orange sapphire. And it comes from the Sinhalese word for lotus flower. And sometimes it can have an orange pinkish color to it. And they're found originally in Sri Lanka. And they felt, when they were discovered, the legends around this beautiful orange sapphire was it contained the power of wisdom and the ability to overcome challenging obstacles. And apparently it is exceedingly rare. And this woman that was wearing this magnificent stone on her ring finger, a friend of hers who was an East Indian, he said, he had a stone, and she admired it. It was of this color. It was this orange sapphire. She said, oh, I'd love to have one. He said, well, I'll bring one back for you. And so he had gotten it, and then she had it cut and fit the way she wanted it to. But it is absolutely captivating. And the applications of stones in so many cultures really have significant meaning. And they say with this orange sapphire, it makes you feel at home in the physical world that we live in, and to enjoy life, to really enjoy life. And they associate it with a chakra, the second chakra. It's fascinating when you get into these various stories about stones. And if you're ever interested in it, I strongly recommend you check out The Book of Stones by Robert Simons and Naisha Asian, because, boy, they've really got it together. It's their passion. It's what they love to do. But learning different things about places and various components and how they've come together and fables and lore, it's always so much fun. Well, I wanted to share something with you, speaking of this golden orange sapphire, about a farmer that found a harvest in 1983, the day, the 22nd of May in Dorset, England. Now, this farmer was taking care of his freshly planted barley. But he found more than barley in this field of his. He discovered a legendary treasure he had spent years looking for when he was a young man. Now, the field had been recently plowed, and something started catching the sun's light. And he looked over at it, and he wondered what it was. Well, it was a gold coin. From the plowing, up it had popped. He spent months using a metal detector finding other coins. In fact, he found 100 coins in the same field. Now, what were they? They were called nobles and half-nobles. They'd come from the 15th century, and this was during the reign of English monarchs Henry V, Henry VI, and Edward III. Now, these coins were in absolutely perfect condition. The reason they were, they found that they had been buried in a pottery container. The container was broken by the plow when it was being taken through the field. And in May of 1985, they auctioned off 95 of these coins at Christie's in London for $100,000. Now, it probably would have been a lot more than that in today's world, but that's what it was in 1985. Now, backstepping a little bit in time, we'll go back to 1942. In Mendenhall, England, a British farmer plowing his field, his plow got stuck in something. It was metal. And what they found the metal was the first of 34 pieces of a hoard of Roman silver dating from A.D. 370. They think, they don't know for sure, that somebody buried all of his silver because Saxons were raiding the area and they never were able to find it. Now, the plowman, whose name was Gordon Butcher, had been hired by the owner of the field, Sidney Ford. And for 4 years, Mr. Ford kept the treasure to himself until a doctor came to visit one day, and the doctor reported the find. Now, the real prize piece that was found in this field in 1942 was the Great Plate of Bacchus. It measured 18 inches in diameter and weighed 20 pounds. It showed a drinking match between Hercules and Bacchus. Now, the treasure had to be turned over to the British Museum, with the exception of one silver goblet. Now, this goblet was 5 inches high with very delicate decoration and four legs. Somehow or another, that goblet disappeared, never made it to the museum. Wonder who took that one. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is an adventure, and you never know what you're going to find. Sometimes your treasure may be in the most unlikely of places and situations. Enjoy the experience. This is Donna Sebo. We'll talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here at BBS Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.